We'll get to that. So delighted to bring back John Hinderacher from the Powerline blog. Folks, you want to be smart, you want to keep up on the news. Aside from listening to this station, of course, you got to read Powerline. John Hinderacher, one of the co-founders and really one of the smartest writers and legal political minds in the country. John, welcome back.
Hi, Seth.
So glad you can join us and join us on our new show with me and my co-host Chris Buskirk. John, a lot has been breaking over the past few days. Some of your colleagues over at Powerline have been writing about the investigations out of the FBI, the Department of Justice. It's enough to give you whiplash to try and keep up with it. And frankly, some of your colleagues at Powerline are a little skeptical of different reports, as we all should be. And not skeptical about the same things. But, John, wearing your attorney's hat more than your political analysis hat, what do you think is the most trenchant of what we're learning that's coming out of the DOJ and FBI right now? What do you think is the most damaging? What do you think is the most likely and permanent?
Oh, interesting questions. But you know what? I'm going to take off my lawyer hat.
Okay.
Because my opinion, Seth, is that a lot of people are putting these issues relating to Hillary Clinton in way too much of a legal context.
Okay.
And I think a lot of people, you know, fall into this habit of, you know, either something is a felony and a person can be prosecuted, convicted, and sent to prison, or else it's A-OK, and she's a great presidential nominee, you know? I mean, here's what I would say. I would say that the most salient point is not anything. You know, we don't know, for example, the emails on Anthony Weiner's laptop that came to light. We have no idea what they are, what they say. Are they new? Are they duplicates? There could be some astonishing information in there, or they could be completely boring. You know, I've got a theory about Anthony Weiner perhaps downloading them from his wife's Yahoo.com account, maybe as a form of protection or
maybe
as a form of revenge. And we can talk about that. It's total speculation.
Sure.
But I don't want to get lost in the weeds, because I think the most important thing that's come out in this whole range of issues is James Comey's report and finding that Hillary Clinton and her staff were extremely careless in their handling of classified information. Now, that finding actually could support and probably should support a federal prosecution, but for a voter thinking about who he wants to be our next president, that finding is more than enough.
John, this is why I complimented you so well in the intro, because you took me out of the weeds, and you were right to do so. You're looking at the bigger picture going into next Tuesday, and it is this. It's exactly what you said. It's that you have a major presidential candidate under DOJ and FBI investigation, and even if you didn't have that, as I hear you rightly, you could just take his comments from earlier this summer, and that should be sufficient to make everyone who's honest wary. That's one issue. Second issue, there's nothing in, whether it's the stuff I said, the stuff that's come out over the past week, or the stuff going back to before July, there's nothing here now that looks like it's going to get any better for her. There's nothing here. It can only get worse. Any of these stories will only grow. They're not going to shrink or reduce at this point, right?
I think that's true. I can't really imagine a headline that would bail Hillary out in the next 4 or 5 days. What would it be? You know, worst case for her is that there's another shoe that drops, but so many shoes have already dropped. You know, let me make this point, Seth. I think, you know, there's multiple issues swirling around Hillary. One of them is the mishandling of classified information with her private email server. And then there's a complex of issues relating generally to corruption. And the Clinton Foundation is obviously high on that list, and there have been reports coming out, I don't know if they're right or not, of people in the FBI who really, really want to prosecute her and may yet prosecute her for some federal crimes in connection with the Clinton Foundation. But here again, I don't think you have to get way off into the weeds to draw a conclusion. And I would put it this way. Bill and Hillary Clinton are two people who have never had a real job in their lives, either one of them. For the last 30 years, they have been supposedly public servants, working for modest public employee salaries. And they now have a net worth that's reportedly as high as $300 million. Now, you know, do the math. I mean, that's corruption. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to go off and prove a legal case and a criminal prosecution and chapter and verse. Some people have done that. If you read Clinton Cash, you know, a wonderful book, very persuasive. But really, all a voter has to know is that these people have amassed a nine-figure fortune on salaries that never reached as much as $200,000 a year. Now, you can't do that by being a shrewd investor. Remember the cattle futures?
Yes, I do. They didn't give them $300 million. Yeah.
Right. Well, and nobody's that good an investor, right? You know, you can only achieve that through corruption. And we know that the corruption involved ridiculous amounts of money being paid for speeches and millions of dollars in donations to the Clinton Foundation by people who had business at the State Department. Oh, we know all that. But we don't really need to get into a lot of detail to say that people who amass this kind of a fortune while supposedly serving the public interest are corrupt. And it happens over and over again. They all get rich. You know, Tom Daschle got rich. Harry Reid got rich. They all get rich on a senator's salary. And voters understand that there's a fundamental level of corruption here. And they, I think they get it. You know, Donald Trump's got a great ad out right now that focuses really on that basic point. You know, here's this woman who purports to be in public service, and she's got a nine-figure net worth. You know, that only adds up if she's corrupt.
John, it's Chris. I mean, you put it well. I mean, as an ex-lawyer, you sound like you've narrowed in on just the couple of big issues that you want to tell a jury almost. Keep it simple, right? There's all this evidence that's now out there, and people do have this tendency to get lost in the weeds of trying to prove some particular point. But the issue really is, and I've heard it, I mean, they say this in Clinton Cash, basically, that the Clinton Foundation was a big money, is a big money laundering operation. This was the vehicle that the Clintons used to take money from donors, get it to the Clintons, and try and make it look clean. And people paid them for access to the United States State Department. Do you think that message is getting out there? Is that starting to resonate with people as they focus in this last week or so of the election?
Well, sure it is. You know, part of what's going on here, of course, is that Hillary is a terrible candidate. I mean, she is so unlikable. She's a notorious, chronic liar, and everybody knows it.
Hey, John, we're going into a break. Can I ask you to hold the rest of that answer for the other side of the break, just so that more than Chris and I will hear? Great. Thank you very much. We'll be right back with John Hinderacher from the Powerline blog, talking about the Clinton Foundation, the investigations, and what's the important overall picture here. Be right back.
Welcome back. This is Chris Buskirk, and you are listening to the Seth and Chris Show. We have John Hinderacher, recovering lawyer and one of the co-founders of the Powerline blog. We're talking about the Clintons. We're talking about the Clinton Foundation and some of the news that is now circulating into the national consciousness that Fox News is reporting that there may be impending indictments with regard to the Clinton Foundation. John, before we went to the break, I'd asked you the question that there's just since Director Comey sent this letter to Congress at the end of last week, there's now so much attention, so much focus paid to not only to Hillary's illegal email server and to the national security risks that posed. Fox is also reporting that their sources close to the investigation say that no fewer than five foreign governments successfully hacked her email server, but that people are starting to focus on the Clinton Foundation, which is really at the heart of this pay-for-play scandal. It's, as you were saying, this is how the Clintons on the wages of public servants amassed a nine-figure fortune. My question before the break was, is this something that you think is really getting out there? Are voters, as they start to decide who they want to vote for, are they starting to focus on this issue and the level of corruption that goes along with the Clintons?
Well, I think they are. If you look at any poll about Hillary, if they ask people, do you think she's honest? The answer is no. 75-80% of the people, you know, think she's a liar. Is she corrupt,
even Democrats?
You know? Yeah, right. Even Democrats. They say, oh, she's a liar, but I'm voting for her anyway. Is she corrupt? Yeah, people say she's corrupt. So I think this message has gotten through. And I think it gets through with respect to all this noise about the FBI, Clinton Foundation, emails, and so on. But it also comes through in ways that are easier for people to grasp. So what was it, day before yesterday, something like that, she's giving a speech in that really obnoxious kind of hectoring, superior manner that she has, and she says, I understand terrorism. She says, I was in New York on September 11, and I will crush ISIS. You know, in this, you know, pontificating manner. Well, no, she wasn't. She was in Washington, D.C. on September 11. I did a post on this. There's a picture of her singing God Bless America on the Capitol steps. Remember how that happened? And then she gives an interview to CNN on the Capitol steps, 8 p.m. on September 11. It's on YouTube. You know, I mean, she's just lying for, you know, for no good reason except to make herself sound heroic. I was in New York on September 11. And people understand that, whether it's landing under sniper fire or, you know, I was there when we got bin Laden, you know.
In Hillary's mind, she probably doesn't even mean she was in the Situation Room. She may think that she was literally with SEAL Team 6 on the ground in Pakistan.
Right? I mean, she's a legend in her own mind. You know, she's a superhero in this fantasy world she lives in. I think people totally get that, and that's one of the reasons why, honestly, I think Trump's probably going to win.
I think
a lot of people, when it comes down to it, are going to say, "Look, Trump's got a lot of faults. I'm not crazy about him." But Hillary is just disqualified by dishonesty and by corruption and by a certain level of weirdness, you know, when she lies without any expectation that she can even get away with it.
Yeah, that's right. When I read the post that you're referring to that you had on Powerline, and it made me I wanted to look up the definition of a pathological liar, which is. The definition is somebody who lies lies consistently and for no personal gain.
Right.
Hillary seems to do exactly that. There are lies she tells that are the sort of political lies, but then there's a lie she tells that are easily found out, like the one you tell about, or the one that you report about on 9/11. Everybody knows she wasn't there.
Not far from here at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. I was in New York City on 9/11 as one of the two senators. I will defeat ISIS.
Right, exactly. And of course, she wasn't there, and many, many people know that. So I think that message has sunk in, and I think it's going to be one of the factors that very, very possibly could lead to a Trump victory. Let me mention one more thing, too, that you haven't asked about, but that I think is very important. The other factor that I think is huge in this election is the fact that the Obamacare enrollment period for 2017 opened up on November 1st. That timing, I think, is a disaster for the Democrats. All across the country, people are reading about huge increases in premiums, cutbacks in coverage, smaller networks, all that kind of stuff, and systems that still don't work after all these years. I think that is a huge, I know it is here in Minnesota. I mean, private polling says it's the number one issue, and I think that's true across the country.
John, I think it's a huge issue. Here in Arizona, we've had some of the largest hikes in the entire country. I was talking with a friend last night who reported that their premium hike for his family, it was almost 60%, and that's on top of bigger hikes over the past couple of years. It's intolerable, and that hits people where they live. We're going to go to a quick break. We've got John Hinderacher of Powerline Blog here with us. We'll be right back in just a minute. Welcome back to the Seth and Chris Show. Chris Buskirk here. I've got Seth Liebson in the studio with me, as I do every day, which is what makes this fun. We've got John Hinderacher of the Powerline blog on the line with us. John, thanks for staying another segment. It sounds like in the last segment you were predicting a Trump victory.
Well, this is one of those elections where it's hard to see how either candidate can possibly win. And I talked to a senator earlier this afternoon who said that there's not a single person in Washington who doesn't expect a Hillary Clinton victory. But if I had to, and I think it's going to be close, and I don't know what's going to happen. I freely admit, I don't think anybody really knows what's going to happen this year. But I guess if pressed, I think there's a little better than even chance that it's Trump. I just think that Hillary is such a terrible candidate. She's so unlikable. Her character is as we were talking about earlier, is not only is it bad, but people know it's bad. So I don't know. I mean, if I had to pick, I think Trump's going to win.
Is this a? Do you think this is in some ways a replay of the Brexit vote that took place in the UK back in June? In the sense that all the smart money was on the stay side, that thought that Britain would vote to remain in the European Union, and then at the end of the day, it really wasn't close.
Well, there's an obvious analogy there. Hillary Clinton is the establishment. I mean, she personifies the status quo, just like, you know, the whole British establishment was behind the Remain position. And we clearly do have the kind of populist uprising here in the United States that was manifested in the UK with the Brexit vote, no doubt about that. I think the only question is, you know, does Trump get his nose over 270 electoral votes? Now, there's no question that a lot of American voters are really unhappy with the political class, unhappy with the status quo, and we'll see whether that turns out to be 51%.
It's interesting, John. You know, we had a caller 2 days ago on the show, called in, 60 years old, former Marine. I'll caveat that by saying I understand that there are no former Marines, technically, but had served in the Marine Corps and called in to tell us that he had never voted before and that Donald Trump struck a chord with him, that he backed him from early on and was looking forward to voting for him. I think there's more people out there like that caller than the smart folks in Washington may think exist.
There may be. I hope there are. I think there certainly are. You know, if you live in Washington, D.C., I forget the exact numbers, you know, but all the most prosperous counties in the United States are suburbs of Washington, D.C. You know, Washington is the last boom town in America. And I think when you live there and you're out there all the time and you see all the money that flows and all the power, I think it's difficult sometimes for those people to fully appreciate how alienated so many millions of Americans are from what's been going on for a long time in Washington, D.C. And there's no question. I mean, there are millions of those voters out there, and the vast majority of them are going to vote for Donald Trump. And, you know, I think it's going to be close.
Look, I think you're right. I mean, I think we actually have an advantage. I say we, you, me, Seth, everybody at Powerline, some of the other people who are watching this race closely, precisely because we're in Phoenix, you're in Minnesota. We're not in that orbit. We're not in the bubble. And as a result, I think have a broader and more objective experience than people who live in, you know, those half a dozen zip codes.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, just by way of example, there are areas in Minnesota that for a long time have really felt left behind. You know, they're not part of the new economy. Mark Zuckerberg, you know, doesn't come from northern Minnesota. And the government won't let them mine. You know, the things that they could be doing and making a lot of money at have been made pretty much impossible. Well, if you look at the polling, both the private and the public polling in northern Minnesota, the Iron Range and so forth, you know, Trump's going to carry that district by 10 or 15 points.
John, is that the district Newt Gingrich keeps referring to? He talks about this district in Minnesota that's traditionally Democrat. Is that what the one you're talking about?
Yeah, he's talking about our 8th district, okay, which is traditionally a union stronghold. And it's in the process of flipping, and we'll see whether this is the year that it really happens. There's a close House race in that district, but yeah, that's the one that he's talking about, and it's obvious to the people who are paying any attention up there, the Democrats have nothing for them, you know, nothing to offer except contempt. And, you know, there's a lot. If you're living in Washington, D.C., you know, maybe you don't see these people. Apparently they don't. But there's a lot of people out there who know that they're viewed, you know, flyover land. You know, they're viewed with contempt by the politicians and by the establishment.
That's right. I mean, it's not only Democrats, right? Yesterday there was we listened to this audio of George Will saying that the best thing that could happen for the country and for the Republican Party is not just a Hillary victory, but a Hillary landslide because it would be a rebuke to talk radio. He talked about talk radio. He talked about the quote-unquote the blogs because why? Because that represents something that is that's uncomfortable for somebody like George Will. I don't know if you saw that, but any thoughts on that sort of reaction to by Beltway conservatives or longtime conservatives to this reaction from normal people?
Yeah, well, George Will, and I love George. He's done a wonderful job for a long time. But if there is anybody who, you could classify as a non-populist, as an anti-populist, it's George Will. And we conservatives have got to get back in the populist game. Ronald Reagan was a populist. Populism obviously can be led in the wrong direction. You can have leftist populism, but right now the populist impulse in the U.S. is primarily on the right, and I think it's very short-sighted of some of our pundits not to recognize that.
Is Minnesota itself in play at all, John, or just some of those districts? I was just looking. McCain lost it by 10. Romney lost it by about 7. There's not a chance there, is there?
Well, I don't think there is. But what's intriguing to me is that watching the World Series this week, for the first time, literally the first time in 2016, I'm seeing presidential campaign ads.
Okay.
Hillary Clinton is running ads here, and so is Donald Trump. And as somebody told me earlier this afternoon, when the Clinton campaign brags about how data-driven they are, the metrics, they run all these elections, that's all true. They have got an unbelievable machine to analyze all this stuff. And if Hillary Clinton is running ads in Minnesota, it means that they've got some concern.
That's what's most interesting to me. They've got her. Well, they had her back in Arizona last night. I think this is a pipe dream that Arizona's up in play. But, look, we can all debate that till a week from today, I guess, or a week from yesterday. But if she's coming here, she thinks she has a chance in Arizona. If she's putting ads in Minnesota, it thinks she's worried about Minnesota. That to me is very interesting. And I guess she's spending some time again in North Carolina, too. Anybody's guess. But, John, we'll do it with you. And we appreciate all your insights and all your writings. We really do. Keep up the great work. And, folks, again, you want to be smart. You want to read what other smart people are reading. Read the Powerline blog. Read John Hinderacher. Read Steve Hayward. Scott Johnson. And, of course, not to be forgotten, the name that's at the tip of my tongue.
All
Mirangoff. Well, I think I've known longer than all of you, actually. Anyway, thank you so much, John. I really appreciate it.
Thanks,
thank
John.
You. Great to be with you.